17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are willing to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. ATA at a descent. Air control mode, auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm on. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
My guest on Cosmic Perspective Radio is Dr. Gavin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt is a climatologist and climate modeler and director of NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York City. Dr. Schmidt is here with us today to discuss the science behind rising global temperatures. Dr. Schmidt, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
17 of the last 18 warmest years on record occurred since 2001. Is that correct?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. The only year not in the 21st century that makes even the top 18 is 1998. So that's not that long ago. And the top 5 years have all been since 2010, and the top 3 years have been the last 3 years.
Is there a big difference between those 3 years? Is 2014, 15, 16? And I know that a very small amount of increase in global temperature makes a big difference, correct?
Well, we can detect a pretty small amount of change, and so the main issue isn't so much how much warmer 1 year is than another, though it can be 0.1, it can be 0.2 degrees sometimes. But really, it's the long term trends that are important. How much has the planet warmed, since the beginning of the 20th century, and it's warmed almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit, that's enough to see the effects. It's enough to see the effects on sea level. It's enough to see the effects on melting glaciers, on sea ice in the Arctic, on changes in rainfall, coastal erosion, heat waves, and the like.
2 degrees. That's a huge increase.
Yeah, to put it in context, the last ice age, right, which the maximum of that was about 20,000 years ago. The last ice age was only about 8 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit colder than the pre-industrial. So we've gone up 2 degrees Fahrenheit in the other direction. So that's about a quarter of an ice age unit, if you like. So that gives you a little bit more context in terms of how warm and cold the planet gets.
Just in the U.S. alone in 2017, we had these devastating hurricanes, flooding, wildfires, record-breaking Arctic temperatures, and actually it even snowed in a town a friend of mine lives in Texas. It hadn't snowed there, I think, since he lived there, and temperatures here are in the 40s. I understand the data's in now, and how does the year 2017 compare to global temperatures in recent years?
So 2017 was the second warmest year in the record. If you look at the map of changes, you're seeing that warmth is pretty evenly spread across the planet. It's higher on land than on the ocean, but the oceans are still warming, and it's highest most of all in the Arctic, where the effects have been seen the strongest. That hides a lot of weather variability. You mentioned, some cold air outbreaks that we had, particularly in December in the U.S. But while you get these kind of local effects happening, the average across the whole planet is a very definitive warming.
And so this is more like somewhere between 2015 and 16, being the second.
Yeah, that's right. So 2016 was the warmest year, which beat out 2015, which had then been the warmest year, which beat out 2014, which at that time was the warmest year. And so 2017, it came in just behind 2016. So the last 3 years have been the top 3 years.
What are the factors that contribute to the rising of global temperatures?
There are factors that work in the short term, right? So one of the reasons 2016 was warmer than 15 and 17 was because we had an El Nino event in the tropical Pacific that gives the temperatures a little bit of a boost. But that doesn't explain the long-term trends. The long-term trends are up, and those changes are very large, and we've been looking at multiple possibilities. You know, people have been looking at, natural causes, the volcanoes, the sun, changes in the orbit. People have been looking at human activities, increases in pollution, in ozone, in greenhouse gases, in deforestation. And when you put all of that together, there's really only one cause that fits not just the surface temperature changes, but also the changes in the ocean and in the stratosphere and from further the South Pole to the North Pole. And that's the increase in greenhouse gases. When we've done that attribution, what you find is that basically all of the warming that we've seen, it's about a degree Celsius, 2 degrees Fahrenheit, is in fact related to human activity. And the dominant component there is greenhouse gases, and the dominant greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide.
How do scientists get their data for these events, and how do they use it to figure this all out?
That's a great question. So we have multiple streams of data. We have it from remote sensing satellites that have been keeping track of what's been going on since about 1979. We have ground station data, which is where these temperature records are coming from that we talked about earlier. That goes back to the 19th century with a sufficiently dense network for you to be able to say what's going on globally. But we have other independent estimates, you know, ice changes, sea level changes. All of these things are independently measured and put together. Now, understanding what the fingerprint of change is that might be associated with different causes of change, that is, we use our understanding of the physics of the system to calculate those fingerprints. And those fingerprints look different for carbon dioxide than they do for, changes from the sun or from changes from volcanoes or from changes related to ocean internal variability or El Nino events, like we mentioned before. So we can find those fingerprints, and then we go to the crime scene, and we see whose fingerprints are all over the crime scene. And when you do that, you can eliminate a lot of those possibilities because the fingerprint from that effect just isn't seen in the data. So the fingerprint of increasing solar activity would be warming throughout the atmosphere all the way up to the mesosphere, and that's not what we see. We see something that looks much, much closer to the pattern that you expect from carbon dioxide. So we look at all the different possibilities, and we see whose shoe fits. And that's where our confidence comes from that we can attribute those changes.
So this data is it? My guess is it's put into models. Then, right? You take the data, you then make a model. It's kind of like putting the pieces of a puzzle together to find this perfect fingerprint.
So the fingerprints do arise from models that they don't have to be that sophisticated, but they do have to have some actual physics in them. And, we can say, okay, well, change the carbon dioxide. What difference does it make in the stratosphere? What difference does it make at the surface, et cetera? And then, we look at the observations and we see, how those fingerprints match up to the observations.
Has technology enabled us to be more accurate with the data that we received in recent years? Is like 2017 data better than 2014 data that we've received from?
Well, the 2017 to 14, maybe not so much, but 2017 compared to 1950, sure. Compared to 1880, absolutely. We are doing really well in digitizing a lot of old data, but the fact is that there just wasn't the network in the 19th century of weather stations that we have today. So we do have better quality data now. We have satellites since 1979, which have allowed us to really pin down a lot of these things. And our coverage, for instance, of ocean temperatures is much better now than even it was 15 years ago. So that's partly because of better technologies. There's a lot more automation that's going on right now. But it's also because, you know, old data is being digitized and we're doing a better job at synthesizing that data and putting it all together.
I understand that in recent years that NASA has put more satellites in orbit around the Earth and tracking soil samples and droughts.
Soil moisture, that's right. Soil moisture, sea surface salinity, clouds, radiation, surface temperatures. Yeah, I mean, like, all of those things are now being tracked by a NASA satellite.
And with all this information that you have, do you know the percentage of what we're producing as humans and percentage of what's happened naturally or occurring naturally in the Earth?
At the global scale, it's 100%. 100% of the warming that we're seeing at the global scale is because of us. In fact, if you try and work out what would have happened if there hadn't been any human activity, then the planet would have cooled very slightly. So in fact, we've warmed the planet more than you actually see.
So 100%.
100%. Just take it to the bank.
And this is all something we can control. That's the good thing about it, I guess.
we'll see how well we can control it.
Let's hope so. The rising of global temperatures is certainly a global issue. What is the U.S. and other industrialized countries doing to reduce emissions?
Through the Paris Accord, many countries have volunteered efforts that they're going to make to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Some of those countries are quite ambitious. Some are not so ambitious. But the idea of the Paris Accord process is that people will learn from each other, and as the process continues, people will be more ambitious as they learn what works and what doesn't work and what works effectively. In the U.S., the EPA is required to have a plan to reduce emissions, and right now they've kind of withdrawn the old plan and they're consulting for a new plan, but they have to have a plan because under the law, EPA is forced to have a plan given that there is an endangerment finding associated with carbon dioxide and climate change, which is based on decades of scientific evidence.
It's good to hear that we're at least in the process of doing something about it, and certainly major countries that are industrialized are working on this. This issue of global warming, I didn't use that term. I'm always saying rising in temperatures in the rest of the show because it seems to become more of a political issue in recent years than past. So I'm very happy to have you on the show to discuss the science behind the subject with the data that we now have.
Data is what it is, and we try and do our best to interpret what the data are saying. The data doesn't really speak for itself. You know, you have to understand what you're looking at. But, you know, we try, and the answer is very clear.
So basically what you're saying is you take this information, you keep compiling it, it could change, you could come back, and you could change what you're thinking. That's my guess.
Ideally, yes. But generally speaking, that doesn't happen because, you know, we've been looking at this for a while, the fact remains is that these are now pretty robust results. It's not cutting edge experimental science anymore. This, you know, has been reproduced by many different groups using different methodologies, using different data sets, and so you know, if we know anything, we know this.
Dr. Schmidt, thanks for joining us today to discuss the rising of global temperatures. I understand that you have a blog that our listeners can go to learn more about your research.
They can find out more about things associated with climate, not necessarily just my research. It's called Real Climate, REALCLIMATE. There's a lot of stuff there if people want to dive into the details.
Dr. Schmidt, thanks again for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. Thank you very much.
Climatologist Dr. Gavin Schmidt is director of NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Paneros production.